Hi, everyone, and welcome to Ask the Blood Detective. My name is Dr. Michael Wald, and I'm Director of Nutritional Services at Integrated Nutrition of Mount Kisco, which is a health center located in Westchester, New York. Now, for those of you new to Ask the Blood Detective, welcome. This show is all about you. It's all about you. It's about your family and friends and loved ones, because it's about how to maintain your health. It's about how to stay healthy. And it's about your education in terms of health and healing, so you can become your own blood detective. You know, I was nicknamed the blood detective many years ago by a grateful patient because I was able to diagnose her health problem where others had failed for whatever reason. Maybe it was thoroughness, maybe it was lack of communication between her various healthcare providers. The details of that I don't think are as important as the fact that she simply looked at me one day and said, you know, you're like a blood detective. And I thought about that. And ever since then, I take on that label, that branding as a badge of honor. And it actually helps me push harder to find answers for people. And I'm giving you permission to think of yourself as a blood detective as well, because it's my view, at least, and I'm sure that many of you would agree, that it's essential that we play some active role in our healthcare. And when I talk about healthcare, I actually mean both healthcare and disease care. We tend to call our healthcare system today a healthcare system, but really it is a disease care system, meaning that when you get some health problem, either disease or dysfunction, you visit a medical physician, for example, you wait until something is obviously wrong, right? There's nothing wrong with that. I'm proposing, though, that sometimes long before an individual like you might actually feel unwell, there are things going on underneath the surface within your body that at some point get to a point of giving you symptoms. But think about this. Before your symptoms happen, they're not happening, but there are changes underneath. For example, today's show, I will be covering a variety of really, really good questions regarding health. One of them is, what's the difference between being healthy and actually feeling healthy? And can a person be sick but feel well? That's one question I'm going to answer now. But other questions I'll be answering throughout this show will actually cover a variety of very practical topics. Let me read you a few of them very quickly that you, the audience, sent me via email and actually called me up or even posted on my blog. So things like, what's better, foods or nutritional supplements? Is there any evidence? Is there any science for nutritional supplements? And if there is, how come my physician doesn't seem to believe in the use of nutritional supplements or much about diet? And what about testing? Are there actually laboratory tests to see if I'm deficient or insufficient in nutritional supplements? And what about the timing of foods? Could I eat in a particular way so that it could help my memory and my aging and my overall energy, to enhance my physical activity, my results from exercise by just timing foods differently? These are just a few of the very, I think, practical and exciting questions that I've received from a very intelligent audience. So I'm going to start with the first question, and that is, someone said to me, Dr. Wald, I thought that I was healthy. I felt healthy. I went for a routine blood test, and I have hepatitis C. How could it be that I could be so sick and feel so well? Now, whether or not it's hepatitis C, or whether or not it's cancer, or heart disease, or hypertension, or whether or not you simply have nutritional deficiencies in your chemistry, all of those things, one or more of them, for example, and many other health problems can exist in an individual, and that person can feel well. I believe that the answer to why that is has to do with how the body compensates. In other words, for example, with a woman who is having her normal menstrual period and is losing blood monthly, most of us realize that women can become anemic or iron deficient because of normal menstruation. And a common symptom of menstrual periods could be, for example, fatigue. Now, if a woman loses lots of blood every month, that's a bit excessive, but it happens over the course of time, that woman's body can compensate so that she may not be fatigued, because the body has other compensatory ways to manage iron anemia. Sometimes, however, if the anemia is just continues to get worse and is too chronic, that woman may eventually become fatigued. But my point is that if it happens, if a problem happens slowly enough and gradually enough over time, a person may feel well. But if you look on the blood tests, the person might be extremely anemic. If you have, let's go move on to another example of how the body compensates, and by the time you realize you have a problem, you have the problem. Let's say headaches. Headaches are caused by a number of factors, and there are many, many different types of headaches. So I'm going to be very superficial here in my example, but we've all had headaches before. And a headache could be pain and discomfort that has been caused by the accumulation of stress throughout your work week, right? Stress adds up, you get muscle tension, you get a muscle tension headache. Or, on another hand, you might skip a meal or two, maybe you don't eat breakfast, and you tend to get headaches often. Well, you might have hypoglycemia or low blood sugar that adds up to a headache that hits you maybe 2 or 3 days of skipping breakfast, or after just several hours of not eating food or not drinking water. Dehydration, underhydration can cause headaches. There are many, many causes of headaches. And I mentioned hypoglycemia. So the body suffers through the blood sugar going lower, 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 just like it suffers through your body dealing with stress, stress, and stress, or dehydration. And then finally, one day, you get a headache. So we all know that various health problems don't simply happen all of a sudden, although it may seem that they do. There's usually some precipitating factors in either lifestyle or environment, something that stresses the body out. When the body cannot manage itself, when it loses its resiliency to deal with whatever the stress is, again, psychological stress, physical stress, nutritional stress, all sorts of stressors, it then gives a symptom. And we're taught, we wait until we have these symptoms and problems, and then we might do something about it ourselves, or we might see our physicians. Nothing wrong with any of that. But let me give you a more dramatic example. We know, well, here's a simple one, but very common, that stroke and cardiovascular disease is a major killer of both men and women. In fact, it's the number one killer of men and women. An individual may have a heart attack or a stroke quite suddenly, right? But prior to that event, there are clearly things going wrong in that person's body. Perhaps the person has hypertension, high blood pressure. You know, hypertension is known as the silent killer. So that's one obvious example of how this silent killer is lurking, but it gets to a point where blood vessels pop and strokes happen, etc. The same with heart attacks. Over the course of time, most of us know that one potential cause of heart attacks would be high cholesterol levels, either total cholesterol or LDL cholesterol, which is known as the bad cholesterol. And slowly over time, cholesterol sticks to the inner surface of blood vessels, and that makes the lumen or the space in that blood vessel more and more narrow, gradually more narrow over time. And when we lose something like 65% or so of the space in the blood vessel, then symptoms tend to start to happen. Now, depending on how resilient your body is, your body might open up other blood vessels that are considered accessory blood vessels, In other words, sort of sleeping blood vessels. And when other blood vessels get clogged up, these other vessels called collateral circulation, they slowly open up over time. But if they don't open up, or they open up, but it's just not enough to manage the blood flow issues and the pressure in blood vessels, that's when a person gets a heart attack or an MI, a myocardial infarction. Some people have symptoms before they get a hypertensive episode or before they get a heart attack, and many people do not. Now, on the other hand, more than 50% of people who get cardiovascular events like heart attacks and strokes, they have been told that their blood work looks normal. So we're now seeing this from another perspective where we're looking at blood work, what's supposed to be objective biochemistry of your body, and it's not predicting some health problem you have. I mean, have you ever gone to a doctor not feeling well and they take your blood work or do some other test and they say, well, everything looks fine? Well, that happens for a couple of reasons. Number one, I want to just establish right now that blood work is not 100% perfect, or neither is testing in general. But it's important, particularly in context of how you're feeling. Now, we open up the show by talking about how can a person, let's see, be sick but feel well. Well, the answer is similar to the laboratory question, is how can a person be sick and have normal blood work? Well, first of all, I see lots of patients, and I have over the last 27 years of my clinical experience, where they have gone from doctor to doctor, and they have not, because they haven't felt well, and their doctors have said to them, I cannot find anything on your blood work. And then the patient will say to me, Dr. Wald, and I've had every test done under the sun. And I look at their testing, and I see that the testing done is pretty much standard blood work done or other testing for that doctor's specialty. So don't be fooled by thinking that if you're not feeling well and your extended types of laboratory work do not show anything, that there is nothing wrong. What I'm trying to say is that there may be things wrong, but they simply weren't tested by your particular doctor. Oftentimes, by the way, now try to follow me here, a person may have health problems hormonal problems, that they might need to see a hormone doctor for, an endocrinologist. And they might have seen several other types of doctors before then, which simply don't do hormone tests. So the other doctors say you're fine. And since the person's symptoms may not obviously look like hormones, they would never suggest or refer you to a hormone doctor, an endocrinologist. Herein lies, I think, a major flaw and problem with our supposed healthcare system, right? We don't really have a healthcare system. We have a disease care system. You don't feel well, you go to your doctor when you have dysfunction or disease. A healthcare system, at least the way I see it, would work a little differently. What do you think about this? Can you imagine if you went to a doctor and you say and express that you don't feel well, and that doctor looks at almost every organ system in your body in terms of testing, so that everything can be seen and all the interrelationships of your different organs can be appreciated in terms of the chemistry or whatever else, or whatever sort of other laboratory or assessment tests you're doing? That's a holistic perspective, meaning one that looks at a lot of things that work together, right? I mean, think about this. I'm looking at a question on my notes here that relates to what I'm saying. This person writes to me, how come doctors don't do testing outside of their specialties very often? The answer to that is simple. Liability and perspective. On the one hand, if your internist is an internist, he or she may not be comfortable performing lots of, let's say, immune tests, that would be left for the immunologist or the infectious disease doc. Or your doctor may not be a gastroenterologist, so he or she will not be performing those sorts of tests. So the structure of medicine, and to answer this person's very good question, is that medicine is compartmentalized, right? It's clearly compartmentalized. We have cardiologists, we have neurologists, we have internists, we have gastroenterologists, the list, pediatricians, the list goes on and on, OBs, etc. You know, medical school and medicine and health and studying that field is difficult. So medical schools are structured to be compartmentalized. But the problem with that compartmentalization, at least one of the many problems that I see it, that I see is that if you artificially separate parts of the body, you miss things. It is astounding to me, because I know many types of doctors, is that they can be extremely smart in their one area. And you ask them a question outside of that area, and they know less than the average individual or about as much as the average person who doesn't know anything about health. For example, nutrition. The average physician does take a few nutrition courses, and they add up to about 27 hours or so throughout the entirety of the medical education. So if you go to your doctor and say, "Doc, what do you think about nutritional supplements? Do they work? Can I use them?" Now, if that doctor is smart and only has about 27 hours of nutrition training, that doctor's response should be something like, "Well, I don't have any background or real training in nutrition other than very basic things, so I'm really not the right person to ask. You should go speak with a certified or licensed nutritionist of some sort." But most of the responses that people get, and maybe you've received this response, is no. Nutrition doesn't work in the form of supplements. We don't need supplements. You simply need a balanced diet. And that rhetoric has persisted for decades and decades. However, you might be thinking, well, why should I believe you? Why should I believe you, Dr. Wald, that nutritional supplements work? You clearly believe in them. You're biased yourself. So I certainly am biased that nutritional supplements are potentially useful for both the prevention and treatment of many different diseases and conditions. But my training tells me that. So for example, I attended and graduated chiropractic school. I graduated medical school, earned an MD degree. I earned a master's degree in nutrition. So that's when I really started to learn nutrition. Then I became a dietitian and learned a few more things, and then a certified nutrition specialist, and then a sports nutritionist. I have 2 board certifications in nutrition. My point is that because nutrition and health and prevention of disease so that people can live longer and better is what I love, I have therefore surrounded myself with the proper education. So when someone says to me, "Dr. Wald, do you think that omega-3 fatty acids can offset my risk of dementia?" And the answer I would say is yes. And then you might say to me, "Dr. Wald, what about the use of turmeric and boswellia and resveratrol for cancer prevention and treatment? Could those help? Are there studies that show that these can help both the prevention and treatment of different cancers?" And I would have to say, based on my training, yes, absolutely. So a physician should be very careful. All of us should be, even myself, obviously. If I'm asked a question that's outside of my specialty, we should not give our patients the perspective or the feeling that somehow our word is the final word. But I don't see medicine in general playing fair here sometimes, meaning that More often than not, patients report to me very upset because they got excited about nutrition, they did their research, and then they present this to their docs and say, "Doc, you know, I think that my carpal tunnel might be helped with vitamin B6 because I read this study. Or I can help thin my blood with omega-3 fats, folic acid, ginkgo biloba. What do you think about these things? Doc, can I help lower my cholesterol?" without taking medications by eating this way and taking these particular supplements? So my point is, and to answer yet another question on my list here, I have a beautiful list here of wonderful questions regarding health and disease, is there any evidence? Where's the evidence? Easy. It's at the National Library of Medicine website. That's one of several major and well-known websites that every physician knows. Most healthcare providers know about the National Library of Medicine website. It has medical and nutritional articles, studies that date back from 1966 until the present. So what happens is when a physician or a healthcare provider or you want to know, is there any real evidence about something? You want to see the abstracts of the studies. You want to even print out the entire study. You can do that at PubMed.com, publishedmedicalarticles.com, which is the National Library of Medicine. So I was sitting with a patient yesterday, and she was asking me questions about her migraines and whether or not nutrition was effective in managing migraines. And I said, well, absolutely, and I'm glad you're here because I have experience with migraines. I used to have migraines as a teenager myself. They're horrible, and I've learned some things. And since then, I've done some seminars on headaches and specifically spoke about migraines. The answer is yes. There are a number of food factors. For example, citrus is a common precipitator of migraines. So is cocoa, chocolate. But any food that you're allergic to might also precipitate a migraine. Low blood sugar can precipitate migraines. Stress of any type, physical, mental, emotional, dehydration, magnesium deficiency. I could go on with the different types of supplements that might be useful, but they do depend on the person who has the migraine. So she said to me, well, how can it be that all those things you said could possibly help migraines? I went to top headache specialist, and I asked them the same question, and they said, no, nutrition cannot help migraines. And I looked at her, and I said, I really don't know what to say about what you were told. But as the patient was asking me this question, I was typing on my laptop. I went to the National Library of Medicine website, and I typed in magnesium migraines and dehydration and migraines and food allergies and migraines and hormonal imbalances and migraines. And I showed her, I turned my computer around and I said, look at these. See the title of these articles? Look at these journals they're in, all the top medical journals, peer-reviewed studies. And she was absolutely astounded. I try to educate those that I see so they don't simply take my word for the fact that there is so much available in the nutritional area for all manner of health and disease. I encourage people to either do some research themselves, or better yet, I love doing the research for them. I'll send them these articles. And many of them then take them to their regular doctors and say, how can you even tell me about this? How can you deny this? And the doctor can really just look at it and maybe say something like, well, there isn't enough evidence. Look, there is enough evidence. And nutrition and natural health is extremely safe. So there's no reason not to try some of these things. Now, I would say to you, the listening audience today, do not try any of the nutritional concepts that I'm speaking about without having a health professional help manage you. That's the disclaimer I am obligated to give you. So what have we been talking about so far? We've been talking about a variety of health topics that fundamentally are practical for your current level of health maintenance or to help those of you out there that want to get better. We're going to continue to talk more about supplementation, symptoms, how disease happens. But I hope so far you realize that number one, maybe you should be questioning that maybe nutritional supplements might work. Now, what about the question, which is better, supplements versus food? So this question came to me more than 100 times in anticipation of this show. So let's talk about it. On the most superficial level, I think anyone would agree that foods are essential for life, and food should be a major source of our nutritional sustenance. That makes some sense, obviously. But why does that mean, for some, that foods are the most important? Why do we even have to label it that way? In other words, why can't foods be important and nutritional supplements? Well, I believe that the answer to which is better, foods versus supplements, is that if I had to choose one, yes, of course I'd choose foods. And we would want to encourage individuals to consume a clean and healthy diet, which might look something like this. It might look like eating 4 to 6 pieces of fruits and vegetables every day, drinking clean water throughout the course of the day, so you're urinating often throughout the day. Your urine should be on the straw-colored side to know that you're not over or underhydrated. The plant foods, the fruits and vegetables, have many anti-inflammatories, immune modulators, fibers, minerals, enzymes, all sorts of healthy things that we need. And studies have shown that the higher the daily consumption of fruits and vegetables, the lower the rate of virtually all major killers, cancers, autoimmune disease, diabetes, heart disease, strokes. The diet should also be extremely low or absent in refined and processed carbohydrates and processed nutrient-depleted foods. If we take it a little further, we would want to eat organically as often as we can. And we would also want to eliminate saturated and trans fats. Those are a few concepts. Now, diet details or food intake details for you based on your health problem, with your genetics, with your type of lifestyle, might be based loosely upon some of the food concepts and healthy diet concepts I just mentioned, but might have to be personalized for you if you have headaches, if you have hormonal problems, if you have prostate cancer or breast cancer or colon cancer or high cholesterol levels or just chronic fatigue or memory problems, you name it. So we start with a basic concept of what a clean diet should be, which really, when you think about it, should be that we all should consider eating as low down on the food chain as possible, meaning plant foods first, fruits, vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds. For those of you who have a question about grains, should we be eating gluten and therefore are grains healthy for us? I'll simply say this. There are a lot of people out there that are gluten intolerant. And whether or not you're gluten intolerant, the way it is today, it's amazing how society has adjusted itself to make gluten a bad thing. If you are sensitive to gluten, then it's a bad thing for you. And if you're not, it's not a bad thing for you. It isn't inherently good or bad in my perspective. I did write a book called Glutenaholic where I discussed this in more detail. So if we assume for a moment that foods are important, let's talk about supplements. The reason why I argue that supplements are important is for a number of reasons. Even if you say, no, diet is important, diet is the most important thing. Okay, great. But depending on what health problem you may have, you might need a level of specific types of nutrition, maybe more magnesium, or you might need more vitamin C or calcium or certain herbs that would have effects on the body that you could not achieve by simply eating foods alone. And even if you could somehow count up the number of fruits and vegetables you're taking and look in a book or on the web and calculate out how much vitamin C and how much vitamin E or selenium or zinc or whatever the nutrient is that you want to get in, you might find that in order for you to get a serious effect of those nutrient levels, you need to be able to count on exactly the levels. Like, are you really getting, let's say, 400 milligrams or 1,000 milligrams of magnesium sulfate from your foods that you need, let's say, for your migraines or your menstrual cramping, or your muscle cramps, or your cardiovascular disease, or your high blood pressure. So sometimes what I'm saying is supplements provide an advantage because they give you exactly what you need. They give you exactly what you need. Now, I have many other shows posted on my website at blooddetective.com under the blog about what's in those vitamins and absorption, all these different things. I mention that to you because I believe that nutritional supplements, I know that nutritional supplements are essential in disease prevention and health maintenance. But you should listen to my show, What's in Those Supplements, which was the title of the New York Times article that came out a couple of years ago that exposed that the store-bought nutritional supplements that were analyzed in this study by a government agency showed that most of these supplements did not have what they said was on the label. That's a horrific problem. So how do you know what's reliable? Well, I think nutritional supplements should be managed with the help of a health professional. Now, that health professional, like myself, has done plenty of investigation into the companies they use. They may have even developed companies and lines of products because of the problem of unreliable nutritional sources. I have done that. I have my Blood Detective line of supplements. I do not make every supplement that every person needs. But the supplements that I could make cheaper and I could make better than what existed, in my experience, I did. So I offer my clients the opportunity to use my supplements, but they don't have to. If we continue to fail to get the results we want, then I usually more strongly ask, let's please use my supplements. At least we know what's in them. I'm super familiar with them. But that is always a choice. So back to the question, do nutritional supplements work? Well, let me give you just about a minute of history on this, because the American Medical Association, forever, until approximately 10 years ago, don't quote me on that, but it was several years ago, they continually put down the use of supplements, said that they were a waste of time, and in fact said something very funny. They said, supplements cause expensive urine, as if that joke would somehow distract people from the real question, do nutritional supplements work? Now, for decades, the official stance of the American Medical Association, or the AMA, was that physicians should counsel their patients to let them know to stay away from supplements. But they continued to use calcium supplements for bone loss, and they continued to use magnesium supplements for hypertension, even in medicine. They continued to recommend iron to women who are anemic. They continue to recognize that 80% of birth defects are caused by a B vitamin deficiency called folic acid, but somehow that logic got lost on other supplements, and the official stance was they do not work. Until one day, out of nowhere, a study came out in a journal called The Lancet, although it may have been the New England Journal of Medicine, it was a while ago, that stated, guess what, we're wrong. Everyone, man and woman, should take at the very least a multivitamin. And then at the end of that study, as there are in all studies and reputable articles appearing in peer-reviewed medical journals, there are references at the end. And I remember that there was something around 72 references or so, and I remember staring at the references page saying, so all of this research here, these 72 research articles, they just appeared out of nowhere. They weren't all new. My point here is that just because I'll finish that statement. Just because your physician may not believe or know nutrition does not mean that there isn't valid evidence that nutritional supplements are useful. Another question I have here is, well, why not? Why do I have to take more than a multivitamin? Doesn't a multi have everything? Okay. First of all, you don't have to do anything, but a multivitamin, as the name implies, has lots of things in it. But it's not built for you. So at best, it's a basic thing you should think of taking. And the type of multivitamins vary widely in terms of content, doses, the types of supplements in them. So again, what do? You're confused about this? You see a nutritionist, one who is a clinical nutritionist, preferably that knows how to read chemistries and do health histories, to help you figure out, well, what supplements do you need? So the next question here that I get is, this was a popular one, is, well, what supplements do I take? Okay, so we probably would want to start with a multivitamin because that makes sense. The multivitamin may or may not need to contain iron. If you're a woman who tends to menstruate heavily and has a need for iron because you're anemic, then yes, you should take a multivitamin with iron if your doctor agrees. If you are not anemic, then you do not take a multivitamin with iron because if you do, iron itself can be harmful. The amounts of iron in a multivitamin are fairly small, but they could add up and they're supposed to be useful and therapeutic at those levels. So you want to take what you need. Usually it's with a multivitamin with or without iron in it. Now, what about other supplements? Should you take added vitamin C, and what about these herbs and all these other things? The answer is that depends on your needs. So what I do to figure out the nutritional needs of my patients is the following. The first thing I do is have someone fill out a good deal of paperwork which questions them about all the areas of their health. I give them this, what I call a blood detective longevity questionnaire. It asks questions that survey basically all major organs in the body and organ systems, and also gives me the standard information you would expect you need to tell any doctor about your healthcare history and your health goals and all that stuff. And I go through that with an individual and I clarify it, ask more questions, get more feedback from the patient. And then we decide, do we need additional tests that will help us figure out how you can heal? So some testing might be blood levels of some nutrients, or it could contain tests that tell me if certain nutrients are working well in the body or have the potential to work. That's different than a blood level. For example, you can measure whether or not you have enough B12, vitamin B12 in your blood, but that test says nothing about whether or not you're using the B12. So there's another test called homocysteine, and that homocysteine test tells me, do you need and do you use properly B12? And also it tells me about B6 and folic acid indirectly as well in terms of use. Very often, I will have a patient come in, their B12 will be high on the blood, or their vitamin C, and the doctor says, stop taking those nutrients. First of all, vitamin C and B12 are non-toxic. As I mentioned, vitamin B12 and other and other B vitamins, for the most part, the levels don't tell you use. There are some exceptions, though. Let me give you a practical one, vitamin D. Vitamin D levels in the plasma are very useful, right? Many of you have had vitamin D tests done. But let me give you an example of how more than half of you have had your doctors misevaluate the importance of your low level of vitamin D, or maybe you were in the normal range of vitamin D, but you weren't in the optimal place, and then how the advice given to you was wrong. So many of you know you've had a vitamin D level, right? Some of you are thinking, yes, I had my doctor check the vitamin D. Many of you had to ask for it, which is okay, but you'd think your doctor would care more about this because the lower your vitamin D level, let me say that again, the lower your vitamin D level, the higher your risk of dying of anything. That is not an exaggeration. We know this is true, because all cells in the body have receptors for vitamin D, and if you do not have enough vitamin D, either being deficient or insufficient, meaning you have a normal level, but it's not optimal, that can increase your risk of all-cause morbidity and mortality, meaning people tend to develop diseases earlier and they die prematurely from them, shorter lifespan. And giving vitamin D beyond what you eat and beyond the amount of vitamin D you can make by exposing yourself to sun is extreme, to say the least. Vitamin D is a big deal. So for years and years, it was said in traditional medicine, don't take nutrients. And now every practitioner in medicine of every specialty knows about vitamin D. They may not know how to handle it, but they certainly know it's important. So here's what you should know. If you have been told that your vitamin D level on your blood test is low, meaning it would be less than 30, some of you were told, go take some vitamin D, go get some sun. That's completely wrong advice, probably malpractice, because studies have shown if your level of vitamin D is less than 30, you should be taking 50,000 units of vitamin D, and if you're overweight to a certain extent, as much as 100,000 units every week for between 4 to 6 or 8 weeks. And then you have your vitamin D level checked again. Where do you want your vitamin D blood level to be? That's the million-dollar question. I'm going to tell you right now, and it's not going to cost you $1 million. You just need to listen. The level of vitamin D you want on your blood should be a 70, or between 70 and 100. But a 70 is where the number falls that seems to be associated with a greater level of health and sense of well-being and lower overall risk of dying and poor quality of life. So if you were told, oh, your vitamin D level is low, go get some sun, well, you can forget that, because it is nearly impossible to fix a low vitamin D level in your blood by sun exposure. That's how they found out that vitamin D was a problem in the first place. They looked at Floridians that had all the sun exposure, and they were all low in D. And yes, a good deal of the population is low in D. So you want to, if your doctor said, oh, take some vitamin D, take 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, it's very important to fix vitamin D and to know how to do it. So the long and short of vitamin D is that's a blood test that is very important in terms of telling you how much of something to take. A lot of the other vitamin levels in blood, they only represent the last several days of your intake. They're not long-term assessment tests. So sometimes tests of nutritional use and tests of absorption of what you eat are needed. You know, I've said this in my other shows. You know, we've all heard the old adage, you are what you eat. Now, a blood detective would say, well, we're not what we eat, we're what we absorb from what we eat. And then when you think about that, you're like, oh yeah, that's obviously true. And if we take it a step further, we are what we activate from what we eat. So, as I was mentioning, I have my patients fill out detailed assessment work, paperwork, that surveys their different organ and organ systems. We have a conversation. We decide on what specific tests are useful and correct, along with the answers to questionnaires, because signs and symptoms, they can tell you a lot about nutritional need, even the way you look. For example, if you're very pale, you may be anemic, or you might be hypoglycemic, or you might be protein deficient. You might have very dry skin. You might need more zinc, vitamin A, proteins, fatty acids. It might mean that your thyroid is slow. You might have hair loss, both men and women, along with dry skin, maybe a tendency for constipation, maybe slow, sluggish energy. That might mean you have a low thyroid. I did 3 shows called Diseases That You Can See in the Mirror, where just looking at yourself gives you clues about your nutritional needs. Now think about this. You can tell a lot about your nutritional needs and diseases by simply looking at yourself if you know what to look for. And my shows talk about a ton of that. You figure out, again, a lot of nutritional and health needs by answering questions in questionnaires. You can gain even more information about your health and nutritional needs and how to manage them through a conversation with a trained person that puts all of that together, how you answered your questionnaire, and how you answered their additional questions based on your responses. Then you add in laboratory work, and you put it all together, and you are not leaving any organ system out, and you're not only thinking in a compartmentalized way in one medical specialty, and all of a sudden, answers happen. You know, what's really interesting, to give you another practical example of how medicine sometimes just misses things. It's not even a matter of intelligence. I mean, most physicians are extremely well-meaning, bright individuals that care about you. The problem, though, is, let's say you have hardening of your arteries. So you speak with your internist that might refer you to your cardiologist, or it may have been the cardiologist that figured that out. And then they write you a script, and they say to you, you know, exercise more. The problem there is that, why do you have hardening of the arteries? Yes, it's probably been contributed to from a lifestyle that maybe lacked exercise or regular exercise or the right type of exercise so that your blood vessels remain flexible. But when that healthy lifestyle of exercise is not there, you might get hardening of the arteries. But you might also get hardening of the arteries if your diet is deficient in omega-3 fatty acids, if you do not have enough antioxidant nutrients. Now, there's evidence for all of that. But what if you did have all the nutrition you needed and you ate really, really well and you still ended up with hardening of the arteries or high cholesterol? Well, you might need to see a gastroenterologist to do tests of absorption, because maybe you were malabsorbing what you're eating and your body suffered as if it was deficient because you were malabsorbing, not absorbing what you're eating normally. And then if you need nutritional advice, you go to the dietitian. So the point here is that we've already talked about 3 or 4 different medical specialties. And most of the time, these specialists do not really communicate. And that is a problem. So what are the best tests is another question for nutritional needs. There are really no best tests, although I did do a radio show called The Top 10 Tests, Laboratory Tests That Could Save Your Life. It's on my blog, where I do review several. But the right test for you should be chosen based upon your needs. However, tests like a test of your metabolic rate called a body composition is very important, because that helps figure out your food intake and your supplement needs based on how you burn things. I also like to do what's called a complete blood count and a comprehensive metabolic panel, which looks at your red and white blood cells and your minerals, your liver enzymes, all of that. And then, I do vitamin D levels. I measure different inflammatory markers. But beyond that, the testing that would be done for an individual needs to be chosen for that individual. Now, you might listen to my show called The Top 10 Laboratory Tests That Can Save Your Life, and because you know a lot about your health issues, when you listen to that show, you will tell me some of the tests that you need. So that's how you figure out the best tests. Although, depending on your health problem, again, if you have, let's say, chronic joint discomfort, you might want to do tests that a rheumatologist would do, which look at the various autoimmune tests that look for different autoimmune diseases that can cause chronic joint pain. So there are certain basic things, just like everyone should have their blood lipids checked, like cholesterol, LDL, triglycerides, all of that, plus more detailed lipids, given the fact that cardiovascular disease, as I mentioned earlier, is the number one cause of death in both men and women. So there's some fundamental things I recommend for everyone. And then the rest of it I base on careful conversation, the questionnaires, etc., the things that we talked about. What about this question? Someone wrote to me and said, Dr. Wall, what about when should I take supplements? And, you know, how should I structure how I eat? Okay, no one needs to get overwhelmed with this. Here's the answer, very simple. When it comes to how to eat, You basically want to be grazing throughout the course of your day. You eat something every few hours that helps maintain your blood sugar, and it helps maintain your energy, obviously, which helps you think better. You'll basically feel better. And then you can, that also increases or improves, I should say, your resiliency against the day's stress. The what you should eat should be some of the basic concepts of food intake I talked about earlier. And then anything beyond that, what's special for you to think about in terms of eating might needs to be based upon a more careful, you know, intake by a healthcare provider that, tells you what you should be eating and when. Maybe you want to lose weight. Maybe you want to put on muscle. Maybe you're a long distance runner. Maybe you just run a few times a week. There's all sorts of ways of eating for different health effects. And I do speak about a lot of these in my prior radio shows. I did one on weight loss where I reviewed at least a half a dozen different types of weight loss food plans that might be more or less appropriate for different people. So individuals get confused sometimes when they say, well, I eat well and I do a lot throughout the day, so I'm exercising. Think about it this way. If you really think that you are eating well, perhaps you've been taking supplements, maybe you're even juicing, you're exercising, do all the things that seem on the surface to be the right things, and you still have problems, health problems, consider that you may need other things. You might not, or you might not be doing the things you're doing quite precisely for your particular needs. Simply put, if what you're doing is not working, you need to change it, no matter how correct it seems to be. Here's a question about medication and supplements. The question is, Dr. Wald, will my nutritional supplements affect my medications? So that's a very general question, but a really, really important question. The answer is yes. Nutritional supplements can both work with medications in a positive way, or nutritional supplements can interfere with the what you want medications to do. So they call those drug-nutritional interactions. Just like there are drug-drug interactions where you can take different drugs together and they can significantly impact how one or the other drug works. And people can die from these sorts of reactions. So when it comes to drug-nutrition interactions, you must talk to a trained health professional to figure these out. Do not try to just Google that information. It is far too complicated, and it deserves the attention of a well-trained healthcare provider. But I will say this. Most medications, or many, are interfered with by grape juice, or grapefruit juice, I should say. Grapefruits have a chemical in them called naringenin, which affects how the body detoxes many drugs. So your medications may not work as well if you're drinking any amount of grape juice at all. But the number of nutrition drug interactions are so many that I couldn't possibly do them any justice during this radio show, except to say that a trained health professional will be able to distinguish those. So if you're on a medication, for example, that helps you sleep, let's say, or reduces your anxiety, and you take a nutrient like melatonin that helps you sleep, or like chamomile, which can help your anxiety, if you take them together with your medication, it might feel like you're taking a lot more medication. That would be a synergistic effect, or an additive effect, where one plus one like helps each other. If you are taking blood thinners like aspirin or Coumadin, which is warfarin, you would need to be monitored carefully by your medical physicians who prescribe those medications, but also by a nutritionist that understands what nutrients can impact warfarin, Coumadin, or aspirin. So if you take omega-3 fats, for example, we know that omega-3 fats thin the blood. Do they thin the blood anywhere near what warfarin does? No. But if a person is on warfarin or any medication that you may be on, you're on it for a purpose. And you want to get that purpose if you've chosen to take it. you can use the right nutrition that can help offset symptoms and all kinds of adverse effects of medications. And on the other hand, I've seen many patients that just did not think about their medication-nutrient interactions, and their medications didn't work as well. So that's a factor to think about. And the final question for today is one that was asked by a fair number of people, actually. How long does it take for improvements in diet or nutritional supplements to work? So, as you might imagine, the time it takes for diet or lifestyle changes, whether it's exercise or sleep or taking your nutritional supplements to work, will depend upon you. It'll depend upon your health problems and how accurately and how well and how compliant you are following a healthier lifestyle. If you've had a health problem like high cholesterol for years, it might take several months for nutrition, exercise, and supplements to normalize that. It also could take up to a year or even more in some individuals. If you have hair loss, for example, that's unwanted, I saw a woman just yesterday with this issue where she had an autoimmune disease of her thyroid. Her thyroid was removed. She was put on thyroid medication, but she was left to still deal with a tremendous amount of hair loss, which is very distressing. So her doctors fixed the big problem, but didn't fix all the mess that was caused by the problem. So I would imagine that since she had this thyroid problem called Graves' disease, probably for several years at least, it could have been stirring up when she was even a child, it might take, you know, 6 or more months before her hair will start to show improvement. That's the earliest I would expect to see those changes. So the point is here that how long it takes for things to work depend on a number of factors. One of those factors is what is the problem, how severe is it, and then the other thing is you. How well you can manage the new changes. Now, when I work with people, I do not make suggestions that are impossible to do. And if I do make suggestions that seem to be overwhelming for an individual, it's my job to then change them so that I can figure out a way that the person can actually benefit and move on and feel good about themselves. Because anything other than that is a waste of time, right? So my goal for you or anyone is that you can make changes that are doable, that you understand, and that help you get well. Sometimes changes in nutrition and lifestyle, using supplements, for example, they create changes super fast, within days even. And other times it may take longer. I mention this because I've seen too many people stop prematurely because they didn't know their chemistries were changing better, but because they didn't feel any better. And on the other hand, I've seen probably even more people, because I see very smart patients, you know, they've done a lot of things nutritionally, they've read about it, learned about it, tried things. And on paper, it looks like they did everything right, but they never really had the right guidance. And some of them had seen health professionals that had, you know, degrees in nutrition, but sometimes you have to shop around a little bit, just like with any practitioner. So I'll end today by inviting you to send me your questions and show topics to my email at info@blooddetective.com. For those of you who want to talk to me or see me as a patient, you're welcome to. I would love that. My number is 914-552-1442. And again, send those questions to info@blooddetective.com. This is Dr. Michael Walden. Thank you very much for joining me for this episode of Ask the Blood Detective.